jobs numbers in April were a lot lower than expected. Instead of a million jobs added, it was just over a quarter million. Why? There's lots of ideas out there. Some of it may have to do with continued reluctance to return to work for health reasons, as just about 40% of Americans are fully vaccinated. Business groups and Republicans have pointed at a boost in unemployment benefits as an incentive for people not to get a job. And a Pew Research Center survey found that over 60% of unemployed people had seriously considered changing careers. It's caused many to reassess what they want from life, including what they want from work, and that might contribute to a lag in a job rebound. We're talking now about the most recent job numbers and recovering jobs lost during the pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you lose your job sometime during the pandemic? Where are you at now? Are there jobs you would do, but the wages are too low? If you're looking for work or looking for workers, we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Menzie Chin is a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. Menzie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
I remember back in the rebound from the Great Recession, looking at the monthly job reports every month, and 250,000 for a long time there would have looked like a really good report. Why does it look like a really bad report last month?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is that we've been attuned to these big rebounds in employment in, you know, hundreds of thousands, multiple hundreds of thousands for several months. That was one reason. But on top of that, the forecasters had been expecting something on the order, as you mentioned, of 1 million jobs created. So 266,000 non-farm payroll jobs, while not a bad number, was just a big surprise. And so now we have to parse out the data and figure out what does it mean?
Yeah. All right. Parse out the data for us, Menzie. What does this mean?
Well, let me just go through the possibilities or the possible explanations. One is that just the recovery is slowing down because there's not enough demand for labor because demand for goods and services is it's slowing its increase. The second category would be its supply factors, like perhaps the unwillingness of people to work because of generous benefits or because they face constraints in terms of childcare. The third possibility is it's something statistical, and that is perhaps because we have difficulty counting exactly the number of people who are employed. Remember, you have to call up firms and take a poll, and you're only getting a sample, and you may miss a representative sample when you construct this poll. In addition, there's these distortions when you take into account the seasonality of the data, and you try to take care of it as best you can, but the big drop in employment in March and April of last year could make that more difficult over time. So there are a variety of explanations that are possible, and then we have to try to figure out which ones are more plausible than others.
Let's dig in the one that's been the most politically controversial. As I mentioned, groups like the Chamber of Commerce and Republicans are saying we've got these enhanced unemployment benefits. And maybe they were okay when the economy wasn't recovering. But now the argument is the extra money is an incentive to not work, or at least it's making people more reluctant to work at the lower wage jobs. How do we measure something like that? How do we figure out if there's something to that?
Well, that's actually quite difficult because you have to cobble together information from several disparate sources, and there's not anything that just says, "Well, we're not working because it's better to be on enhanced unemployment insurance." I think the fact that long-term unemployment came down and sort of the claims for new unemployment insurance didn't go up. These sort of count against that factor being important in April's numbers. And remember, these numbers pertain to the roughly the second week of April. So this is a ways back already. On the other hand, you can look at the composition of new jobs, at least coming from the household survey. Okay, so different from the establishment survey, which is essentially surveying businesses. When you ask people, what we find is that most or essentially all of the net new jobs were male respondents, whereas actual female employment went down. And so that's sort of circumstantial evidence to suggest, well, if you thought it was unemployment insurance generosity that was driving things, why would you see this sort of pattern of employment gains? So that leads us to a possible alternative view, which is maybe it has something to do with the constraints that people, households face in terms of, let's say, childcare or taking care of parents and so forth. So the politically charged argument that you mentioned, maybe that will come to pass in the future. Maybe that'll be relevant. It's not clear. I'm not ruling it out, but it's not clear that that was particularly relevant in April.
Talking to Menzie Chen, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, looking at jobs and employment and unemployment in the United States. April job numbers positive, but nowhere near as positive as people had been predicting or hoping. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you out of work? How is the job search going? Are you an employer? Are you able to find people to do the jobs you need done? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Menzie, let's hit on that point you just brought up there. Women in particular not getting back into jobs. And you mentioned the concerns of things like childcare or and caring for parents and things like that. And, of course, the pandemic itself isn't over. Could you talk about a little more about why that might be holding jobs down?
Well, the fact of the matter is that for a long time in the United States, we've had concerns about labor participation rates being constrained somewhat by virtue of the fact that a lot of the things that we need, for instance, to enable people to go to work haven't been there, you know. And so childcare, I think, has taken on greater importance, including in terms of with schools being closed. That is a constraint that falls disproportionately on certain members of each household. And so until we deal with that issue going forward, it's not clear to me that we can get back completely to normal in terms of labor force participation. It just goes to show, the very sharp disjuncture in terms of the labor gains seems to point at that. I'll also note that, sectorally, one of the big places where you have a pretty rapid increase in employment was in accommodation and food services. And so I don't know about the gender breakdown in terms of employment there. But what's true is where we've seen tightness in the labor market the most, and where firms are talking a lot about not being able to hire people at the wages that they were offering previously, is exactly in that area. So if you're saying, well, we should have expected more jobs to be created, well, maybe there would have been more sort of from the supply side if people felt like they could leave home to go to work.
Another issue people are pointing to, and I'm not sure if it's something that would actually affect jobs yet, but maybe it is bottlenecks in supply chains for things. I hear from my family in Michigan, there are parking lots full of cars that are complete except for computer chips that there's a shortage of. We hear about high costs of lumber because of bottlenecks in converting timber into lumber, other raw materials, other finished goods. Is this a problem we're having, and what effect would it have on jobs?
So that's an interesting point. And, the fact of the matter is we've had a somewhat big change in the character of the U.S. economy, in the sense that we're now producing, or we have been up to this point, reoriented more towards production of goods rather than delivery of services. And so, the chip issue had to do with the fact that chip production or chip orders were reduced when demand for cars went down. And now demand for cars has gone back up, and it's taking time to ramp up production to this new elevated level. So at some point, because you can't keep on making cars that don't have the chips so that you can sell them off, they'll want to reduce the pace of production, and that's gonna limit employment. On the other hand, some of this is, it's not clear that it has a direct impact on employment. So, for instance, lumber prices rising because of this big boom in renovation and construction. Now, it's not clear to me how that affects employment directly, except it has ramifications for inflation more generally, which we can come to later. In general, these things are going to, both of them will tend to raise prices or upward pressure on prices will be enhanced, it's unclear to me how sustained they'll be. So do you need to worry about prices of goods rising a lot due to these factors in and of themselves? The fact that wage rates are rising is also another issue. I mean, we see tightness in, for instance, once again, accommodation and food services. And so right now, the firms are having a hard time getting the labor they need, but presumably wages will continue to adjust upwards. And if you have a resolution or some sort of solution to childcare problems and other constraints, then that bottleneck can be relieved. So I don't have a clear answer for you. We have these one-time shocks in certain sectors that are going to tend to push up prices and push up some wages. And it remains to be seen how persistent those will be.
We continue our talk with UW-Madison economist Menzie Chen about April's low job numbers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Peggy is with us in Casco. Peggy, hi. Oop, are you there, Peggy?
Yes, I'm here.
What do you want to tell us about?
Okay, I have two things. It was like 13 years ago that I left a good-paying job, and I was collecting $317 a week, and there was not a single job out there that paid as much as my unemployment. And I don't think that's any different now, especially since the government refuses to take away that extra money. That's part of the problem we're having.
And the other thing, Peggy?
Okay. The second comment is I should be retired, but I have people actually calling me looking to see if I'll work. I have a state park camp store that cannot find help. I work at a vegetable farm whose main cash crop is strawberries. They cannot find pickers. And I'm at a grocery store that's crying for help. It's just unreal. There is nobody out there that wants to work.
Peggy, thanks for the call. Menzie, we see a lot of viral signs on stores saying what Peggy ended with there, nobody wants to work. What do you think?
Well, first of all, what do they teach you in introductory economics is supply and demand, and wages can rise in order to match quantity supplied to quantity demanded. So in some sense, there's not enough people taking up the jobs because the wages aren't sufficiently high. Now, why does the wage need to be higher than it used to be? One of the reasons is possibly the enhanced unemployment insurance benefits, which are going to expire eventually. That might be part of it, although we don't have evidence to indicate that that's a big factor. The other one is, for those people who are not vaccinated or those people who have the constraints that they do with family care or child care and so forth, well, maybe that's just a hard constraint, which makes it difficult for them to take the jobs, even at the wages that might be higher than they were before. In terms of picking fruit and so forth, we do know that the restrictions that were in place in terms of immigration and movement of labor across the border, I mean, we tightened up a lot there. And so agricultural concerns have long mentioned that this was a constraint. And it's not surprising that, as time goes on, those constraints are being felt even as the labor market tightens everywhere else. So it's hard to apportion importance to each of these factors, but I think they're all there. And what we will see is something that we sort of expected was eventually wages will rise as the economy recovers. And part of getting people employed will be for wages to rise from long, low levels to higher levels.
Thanks for that call, Peggy. We'll go to John now in La Crosse. John, hi. John? I think we may have lost John. Let's try Mike on his way into Milwaukee now. Mike, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Mike?
Hey, I just wanted to bring up a point. You mentioned something about the supply chain, mm-hmm. and that it, you know, that there might be some little bulges in there. And I actually completely disagree with that. I believe that the supply chain is broken right now, and it's going to be quite some time before it is fixed. That microchip issue that you're seeing was, I mean, that made really good news headlines, and that's why everybody is talking about it. But any multi-component part assembly, everybody is getting a lesson in where all of those components come from, and they are worldwide. So if the factory was in Taiwan, that still might be shut down. You may not be getting your widget in order to complete this component. And we're going to see this effect in the supply chain for, I would say, next year at this time.
You're thinking about this a lot, Mike. Is this affecting your work?
It's a fact that it is very near and dear to my heart. I worked in supply chain for over 15 years. Ironically, was let go in fourth quarter, you know, during some COVID cuts. I was in upper management and in the sourcing standpoints of supply chain. And I happen to have a patent on a component, a part that is a multi-component part that my order is tremendously delayed because of this thing.
Interesting. Mike, thanks a lot for sharing your up-close experience there. Menzie, what do you think? There might be some components, Mike says, that it's going to be a long time before the supply chain gets fixed.
Well, I think that's an important issue, and it's one that's not completely knowable. In most of the analyses that I see don't, you know, can't make a definitive answer about how sustained these problems are going to be. Right now, the microchip issue is, you know, largely hitting one sector that's important to the economy is automobiles. You know, other parts of the supply chain, when you talk about lumber, well, lumber is important, for instance, but it's not, you know, for enough high enough price, you can still get the lumber. And so it's a question about not stopping production, but just making production or construction more expensive. But I do think that what this has all forced us to do is to think a little bit about how we trade off the cost effectiveness of having really lean supply chains with only a few producers of each particular good, and you know, having something that where you diversify your sourcing more broadly, and maybe you have a little bit less cost effectiveness all along the supply chain. You know, right now you have to think about there being a whole sort of sequence of shocks that are going to actually slow down the economy. And at the same time, accelerate inflation. And so far, we haven't seen that, but one never knows. I mean, one didn't know that there was going to be a ransomware attack on a pipeline. That you can still see that it probably will be resolved soon. But if you have a whole sequence of events like that, as the economy booms and you get closer to everybody running at close to capacity, that could happen. That could be a concern.
Mike, thanks for that call. Carolyn joins us next in Southwest Wisconsin. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. I thought I would mention that I actually was laid off during the pandemic because I was working for a small, creative, very fantastic artistic company that designed artwork for hospitals. But I think what happened there was I was the newest employee, and I also was the only one that had a child that was in a school level. So I had to start working from home completely and homeschooling. And so they did finally decide to lay me off because I couldn't fulfill my 40 hours or my salaried hours, which I think was frustrating on both sides. But that was unfortunate. And now here I am. I have a master's degree and trying to find a new position in the arts or art administration. is, you know, it's a bit difficult. And okay.
I'm going to jump in, Carolyn. We don't have a lot of time left. Menzi, I think a lot of people in Carolyn's position may be thinking about a new line of work. What are you watching for as people come back to the work world but maybe have to or want to try something different just in our last minute?
Well, you know, I'm sorry to have heard of your troubles
sure.
there. And it is, I mean, what's true is that the economy is going to be coming back, but some parts of it are going to be drastically changed. It's not clear to me that the portion of professional services that was being mentioned here would be it. I mean, you can imagine that accommodation and food services, for instance, with a big change in working from home and telecommunicating, is going to be altered substantially, you know, location-wise, possibly a way of delivery. So the labor force is going to experience some mismatch on the way up to, you know, the recovery of the overall economy. Just remember, I mean, we're still over 8 million jobs below where we were just before the pandemic struck. So there's still quite a bit of adjustment to occur, and compositional effects are going to be important, I think.
Menzi, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Menzi Chen, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, joining us for a look at the latest in job numbers.